Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about this hour. And a shout out to our great affiliate in Davenport, Iowa. I talked to them at KMA this week. Had a very nice interview with the morning show out there. And so we invite you to phone us. 888-302-3684 gets you right through to me, and we will take your questions. You got problems. You got concerns. You have diet questions. That's what Intelligent Medicine is all about. 888-302-3684. That's our number. And we have some very interesting stories for you in the next hour or two, so stay with us. We will keep you informed about all the latest developments in the field of medicine, on the health front, some interesting new information about a coding system that we as doctors will be forced to adopt under penalty of financial penalties. And this is, actually, you can't even blame Obamacare for this, because this is part of the way that medicine is becoming ever more complex and bureaucratized and difficult for doctors to cope with. So we'll talk about that in just a few moments. Before we do that, though, let's talk a little bit about blood pressure. You know, blood pressure, big deal. Everybody's checking their blood pressure, make sure that it's 140 over 90. Or now they have this new concept, which is pre-hypertension. So it's kind of like the difference between osteoporosis, that's serious bone loss, and osteopenia. Osteopenia is sort of pre-osteoporosis, so we gotta treat it before it happens, right? If we can't sell drugs to people who are sick, we're going to sell powerful medications to people who are pre-sick. So pre-hypertension, we now believe, kicks in at about anywhere above 130 systolic or 85 diastolic. So that actually is a more ambitious definition than frank hypertension, which is greater than 140, systolic and diastolic greater than 90. So here's an interesting article that talks about over-treatment of older individuals. You know, I got to say that probably about half of Americans are taking blood pressure medications. And they take them, and they take them, and they take them. And then the question becomes, well, for how long shall I take them? And very often, the default answer is, well, you better keep taking the blood pressure medications because that's what's keeping your blood pressure normal. So people are walking around with very low blood pressure. And what they have found is that suppressing blood pressure with powerful medications ain't good for older Americans. Americans are living longer and longer. And so what we're seeing is a lot of problems associated with over-aggressive treatment of high blood pressure. Headline, for the very old, a surprise in blood pressure readings. Well, an editorial published in the Archives of Internal Medicine states that in the elderly, those over 85, for example, perhaps the cutoff should be 80, high blood pressure may indicate better health. So you got high blood pressure, that's good. If you have low blood pressure, you might be on your way to check it out. Your heart might be weak. You might be ready to hit the deck, so to speak, because of dizziness and lightheadedness. And part of that has to do with the fact that as you get older, there is a natural stiffening of your arteries. You can work to prevent that with diet and exercise and good nutrients, fish oil, things like kaolic aged garlic extract, olive leaf extract, grapeseed extract, resveratrol. These are things that protect the arterial wall and keep it elastic. But there's an inevitable stiffening of the arterial walls, just like you know, everybody past a certain age needs reading glasses. Well, why is that? For close work, the lens of the eye tends to stiffen a little bit with aging. It's natural. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's a sign of bad health. You know, probably for the vast majority of Americans, half their lives they won't need reading glasses until the age of 45, and for the remaining 45 years they may need reading glasses. Doesn't mean they're going to die immediately because of that. This is a sign of premature aging. It's just a feature of natural aging. Same thing with arteries. They get a little stiffer as you get older. But when arteries get stiffer and you artificially lower blood pressure, something particularly bad happens. The blood doesn't get to your brain. There isn't enough blood circulating to that crucial organ, your brain. And as a result, problems occur. So there's a new study which is entitled Rethinking the Association of High Blood Pressure with Mortality in Elderly Adults. Wow, we got to rethink something which is one of our cherished ideas in medicine. You know, we need to challenge these notions. You know, tradition, check blood pressure, take your blood pressure medication, make sure it's very, very low. Well, maybe not such a good idea for people over a certain age. In this study, they followed people over 65, and what they found was that hypertension's effects begin to reverse in old age. In other words, higher blood pressure may be a sign of more robust health. So they say, quote, the paradigm in medicine is high blood pressure is bad, treating it is good. We're saying maybe we need to look more closely at the guidelines and tailor them more to older adults. It's not just age, it's your physiology, your functional status, or frailty. Well, what does this mean for younger people? Well, the decisions are pretty clear-cut. If you've got very high blood pressure and you're young, high blood pressure can ultimately damage your heart, damage your kidneys, damage the blood vessels leading to your brain, leading to a higher risk of stroke. And so, you know, I see a rationale for treating high blood pressure. I'm not here to say nobody should get treatment for high blood pressure. It's very important. I medicate many of the patients who come to see me at the Hoffman Center in New York. But for older individuals, we need a lighter touch. And as if to echo this important theme, here's a study that just came out this week. Blood pressure meds may raise elderly fall risk. Okay, so we're very concerned about fractures. And the way we deal with osteoporosis is we give bone-building medication to especially women, but also men, when we find that they have thinning of their bone. It's a national obsession to thicken bone with powerful drugs. But what really gets bones to shatter is when you fall. So what good is it if you have osteoporosis medication to thicken your bones, but you fall down because you're on two or three different high blood pressure medications that so drastically lower your blood pressure that you feel weak and woozy and you fall down and you break your hip? This study says that there is added risk for falls that cause serious injury with increasing amounts of high blood pressure medication. Compared to a no medication group, those who had a moderate intensity medication level were about 1.5 times as likely to suffer a serious injury from a fall. Those in the high intensity group, in other words, they had very large amounts of blood pressure medications, they were 1.25 times as likely. So the increased risk was still small, but substantial enough to account for some of the fractures that we see. Diuretics also affect bone mineral density, could increase the risk of fracture. They help pull out calcium and magnesium, which is, you know, not so good when it comes to ultimately your risk of fracture, and that's what we're concerned about. So, you know, one of our cherished practices in medicine. Treat that high blood pressure. Identify it. Screen everybody. Make sure that blood pressure is super low. It's not how low you go. We should not be playing blood pressure limbo a la Chubby Checker in the 1960s with older people's blood pressures. It ultimately may lead to serious problems. All right, 888 302-3684. Let's hear from our audience. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System, a complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh.
Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Staying healthy and building immunity begins in your gut, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. So keeping your digestive tract healthy is imperative for ideal health. I'm Dr. Fred Pescatore, author and science advisor for Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. And there's no better way to improve your digestive health than taking a high-quality probiotic. I recommend taking Dr. O'Hara's every day to rev up the immune system because it has carefully selected strains of beneficial bacteria that work synergistically to maximize health and improve immunity. His exclusive formula delivers live, beneficial bacteria that are easily absorbed and provides optimal digestive support, boosts immunity, and increases energy through better absorption of nutrients. Backed by over 25 years of scientific research, I believe that Dr. O'Hara's probiotic is the most powerful and effective probiotic available. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We invite you to call us 888-302-3684. And a reminder, you can listen live to this program. You can listen via drhoffman.com. And if you're somewhere else or if you are out of our listening area, you can always make sure that you can listen live from noon to 2 Eastern time. And we also put up podcasts on Monday mornings with lots of the stories that we use to give us information on various aspects of health. So check it out, drhoffman.com. All right, this is an interesting story about something called ICD-10. And the Obamacare rollout is causing a lot of problems, but you actually can't blame this on Obamacare. This is actually something that has been underway even before Obamacare got passed, which is the increased complexity associated with medical coding. And I've been in the medical field for 25 years, and it started out that you would just write down the diagnosis of the patient in longhand, and then you just submit it to the insurance company, and then they would, you know, basically, since you're a doctor and you're treating the patient, they would provide either us with reimbursement as doctors if we were taking the patient's insurance, or they would send the patient a check for the service rendered. It was a pretty straightforward deal. But over the years, they become much more persnickety about providing reimbursement. They're sitting in judgment about whether the services we're rendering are justifiable or covered or not. And then they started with this thing called coding. So we all went to these coding seminars because they said, this is the secret to getting good reimbursement. The code is like gold. If you know the right code, you will get more money. If you put down this new magic code that we're giving you, you say you miscode, your visit might be reimbursed to the tune of like $28. But if you use the correct code, you might get $120. for that patient's visit or that patient's service. So it became, there was this magical aura about the codes. And then we would send our employees to coding seminars. They were expensive, but this was an essential part of doing business. And then computers got into it. So before we used to have these giant telephone books of all kinds of codes. Now, and then, you know, sometimes I'd go up to the front desk and I'd say, well, this patient has hypertension. And then the receptionist would say, well, yeah, but I'm looking under hypertension. There's 14 different variants of hypertension. So which is it? And then I'd have to look at the book and I'd have to come up with the magic code, because the more codes you put down, the more money you or your patient gets. So we want to go to bat for our patients so they don't, you know, get denied for insurance. Well, they start out with a couple of thousand codes. Now it's multiplying into literally the hundreds of thousands of codes. And this headline is from this week. The American Association of Family Practitioners raises serious questions about ICD-10 testing and readiness. ICD-10 is the new coding scheme that is about to go into effect. It's gone into effect in some places. But part of the problem is if you don't use the right code, or if you don't code, or if you don't submit via a computer, and these programs are very expensive, and the computer systems are very expensive, and they're very balky and hard to maintain, and hospitals and doctors' practices are going crazy because they're racing to keep up with this. If you don't submit the right code, then either the patient gets nothing, or you, as the doctor, you get about 20% less. You get penalized for not using the right codes. So the number of codes has, as I said, it morphed from 18,000 codes a couple of years ago to now around 140,000. For example, you have a specific code for if a patient's injury occurred in a chicken coop, all right? There are codes for injuries in opera houses. I don't know why it's important to know that you had an injury. Say you stumbled and you sprained your ankle, you know, on the stairs. There's a subcode that has to designate whether that it happened in an opera house, in an art gallery, on a squash court, nine locations in and around a mobile home, or if you sprained your ankle from the bathroom to the bedroom. And they say it's for accuracy of data and quality of care. So I guess they're compiling massive amounts of data on how dangerous it is for people to walk around art galleries or opera houses. There is a specific code for bizarre personal appearance. So you can actually code that, but you don't tell the patient, because the patient might punch you out. This has got to be like a secret code that you transmit to the insurance company. Another code is something called very low level of personal hygiene. So if you have a dirty or smelly patient, you might use code R46.0. There is a code for a burn sustained due to water skis on fire. That is a mystery to me. How often does that happen? Is that like when a trick skier goes through, you know, those hoops of fire that they sometimes have? crazy stunts the water skiers do. Maybe that's how that type of burn occurs. There are 72 codes about injuries tied to birds. There's a code for if you have a collision with a duck, a macaw, a parrot, a goose, a turkey, or a chicken. And it's not just one code. There are nine different codes for each of these animals. There is a separate code for bitten by a turtle versus struck by a turtle, because it's important for the government and the statisticians to keep track of these types of serious injuries. There is a code, understandably, for if you get struck by lightning, which is a rare event. But there's also a code for struck by lightning subsequent event. So what's the likelihood of being struck by lightning twice? Well, there's actually a code for that. That if you're struck not just once, but twice by lightning, there's a code for it. So these codes are bedeviling doctors across the country. They're going nuts, and it's adding to the cost and the difficulty of practicing medicine. It affects you, the medical consumer. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
At Nordic Naturals, we believe that omega oils are essential to an extraordinary life. By correcting the global omega-3 deficiency, each generation can have the opportunity to grow healthy and strong, so you can do more of what you love with those you love. What's essential to us is proven purity and leading freshness. All of our oils surpass strict international standards for purity and freshness. Our oxygen-free processing combined with natural flavoring ensures no fishy smell, taste, or aftertaste. 100% of our fish is wild-caught, sourced in line with the Norwegian Fisheries Management System, and processed with minimal environmental impact. At Nordic Naturals, what's essential to us is simple. It's what's essential to you. Like us on Facebook and share your What's Essential story, or simply visit NordicNaturals.com for free samples. Nordic Naturals is available at finer health food stores nationwide. Nordic Naturals, committed to delivering the world's safest, most effective omega oils.
drhoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. In the news this week, I'm just incensed as I read that. This is just the most horrible thing in the world. Headline: Militant ambush kills 12 polio workers in Pakistan. Militants killed 12 members of the security escort for a polio vaccination team in northwest Pakistan last Saturday, detonating a roadside bomb before opening fire on their convoy. The attack lasted an hour, and when the rescuers approached the scene, the gunmen also attacked them. A dozen wounded were taken to the hospital, but others died on the road waiting for help to arrive. So this is, to me, the worst abomination, because, you know, it's one thing to fight a war. You know, fighting a war, wars are senseless, wars are violent, wars are terrible. But in terms of the decline of civilization, this is the epitome of the decline of civilization, because when you target medical workers, or when you seek to keep out medical workers who are attempting to prevent children from developing a terrible disease, polio, which is still rampant in parts of Pakistan and pockets of the third world, this is just the epitome of barbarism. And it's also in Africa, they have this thing called Boko Haram, which is literally translated against Western education. And, you know, what do you think it takes to make those roadside bombs? It takes engineering know-how and Western technology. So what are you going to teach people how to make bombs and utilize complicated weaponry, but you're not going to teach them about basic health, and you're not going to teach people about how to become nurses and doctors. You're not going to allow women to go to school. This is just a horrible insult to civilization worldwide. And it just appalls me that this kind of medieval barbarism is happening still in the world. I mean, it literally is. The barbarians are pushing back against the forces of civilization. All right. In other news, also not such pleasant news, Miles O'Brien. Remember him from CNN? Haven't seen him for a while, but he used to be one of the anchors for CNN. Nice guy. Very, very pleasant, well-spoken guy in his mid-50s. He was on assignment to cover the Philippine typhoon. Remember that horrible typhoon where they had all those deaths and flooding damage in parts of the Philippines? And he was out there, and apparently a bunch of boxes fell on him. I don't know if it was camera equipment or whatever it was, but it fell on him, and nothing seemed to be so serious about it. He just had a bad injury to his arm. His arm started to get swollen and it was painful, but he didn't seek medical attention immediately because he said, well, it's nothing. It's just a painful, my arm got smashed up by these boxes. Well, what happened was he developed something unusual. It's called compartment syndrome. Compartment syndrome means when the muscles, due to damage or trauma, swell beyond the capacity of the surrounding fascia, which is the tissue that encloses the muscles, to contain the muscles. And the muscles then literally are strangulated. Their blood flow and nerve supply is cut off. And this becomes a medical emergency. Usually the treatment for compartment syndrome is to do what's called a fasciotomy, which is to slice open the fascia, or that tough, fibrous container of the muscles, to open it up so that the muscles, the swollen muscles, can expand. But by the time he sought medical care, it was too late. It was too late for Miles O'Brien, and he was near death and had to have his arm amputated. So now the poor guy, he suffered an arm amputation. He fortunately survived, but what seemed like a routine mild injury resulted in an arm amputation. So a cautionary tale, because if this is something that happens to you, please seek medical attention immediately, because this can be very, very serious. Actually, you can develop compartment syndrome from excess exercise. Compartment syndrome occurs sometimes in overzealous runners or overzealous people who do strength training. I had a personal trainer who was absolutely a nutcase. He was very, very over-aggressive in terms of what he had me do. I was in good shape then. I just run a marathon, but my muscle strength wasn't that great. So he had me doing pull-ups and heavy weights. And after the workout, my muscles began to swell. My arms looked like Popeye's arms. You know, like very, very swollen muscles. And this sometimes can be dangerous because you can develop a compartment syndrome. And compartment syndrome is a medical emergency. It has to be treated surgically to allow literally breathing space for the muscles, which are so swollen and expand against their non-flexible enclosures, which is the fascia. All right, this just in. One thing that we know about smoking is that it's bad for you, right? Smoking, it causes virtually every disease under the sun. Cancer, heart disease, stroke, all have been linked to smoking. But there was a curious paradox, which is that it appeared that the risk of breast cancer was somewhat reduced in smokers. And the thought was, well, okay, maybe it's because women who smoke, they go through menopause earlier. That's one way you can have menopause at the age of 42. You're a big smoker, okay, you know, your estrogen quits at a much younger age. And they thought, well, that's one of the reasons why it may protect against breast cancer, because less estrogen, less risk of breast cancer. Well, think again, because a new study shows tain't so. Women who had smoked over 100 cigarettes in their lifetime, 100 cigarettes, had a 30% increased risk of breast cancer overall. It didn't take much.
If you're like me, you don't have time to be sick, yet our busy lifestyles can leave us vulnerable. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Do you know that in Japanese, Kayo means strength? This winter, find your immune strength with four key natural immune-boosting supplements from our friends at Kyolic. It's what I call the Kyolic Advantage, and what I use myself. Try Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract 103 for natural immune wellness and cardiovascular health. Since 70% of your immune system is in the digestive tract, Kyodophilus bolsters immunity and gut health with shelf-stable beneficial bacteria. On the go, try Kyo Green, a convenient powdered greens drink mix that offers a natural source of key vitamins and minerals. And don't forget ModuCare, a unique combination of plant sterols proven effective at balancing and strengthening immunity. So eat right, exercise, and get the Kyolic Advantage to optimize your immune health today. Available at fine health food stores everywhere.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care?
Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I might say that I'm very proud of our website. It really has an amazing variety of articles, and I'm prolific. I produce a lot of stuff, but also we curate articles from some of the top people in the field of complementary and alternative medicine. So you can see articles by Dr. Stephen Sinatra, by Dr. Teitelbaum, who wrote Fatigued to Fantastic, by Dr. Leo Galland, by Dr. David Perlmutter, and a host of others who really are influential in the field of complementary alternative medicine. So it's a great one-stop shop for your health information. It's continuously updated. We want to provide you with not just stale information, but variety. So this it's been in existence for the last month. So if you haven't checked it out and you're used to our old website, which was fine, but kind of static by comparison, check out drhoffman.com because we got lots of good stuff in store for you there. All right, this item comes to us from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. There's a condition called fatty liver. Now, the way to visualize that is that a normal liver is sort of brownish in color, dark brown, like mahogany brown. And a fatty liver is a liver that is infiltrated with yellow fat. You can see it. I mean, I've done anatomy courses and dissections looking at livers that are fatty, and it's gross. There's all this fat inside the liver. And this is a very, very common condition. It may affect 20-30% of Americans. And it's the result of dietary excess, particularly excess sugar. And it turns out that high fructose corn syrup may be implicated in our epidemic of fatty liver. It's also very much associated with cardiovascular risk, hypertension, and prediabetes, and high cholesterol, particularly high triglycerides. If you have high triglycerides, you may well have fatty liver. Then you start having abnormalities in your liver function. The doctor does a bunch of tests, sometimes a liver biopsy. But then they say, ultimately, we can't find anything. You must have fatty liver. No big deal. What do you do for it? There's no treatment. Essentially, it's like, okay, you have fatty liver. But it's consequential. It leads to the highest number of people who require liver transplants in this country. That's a surprising statistic because you mostly think alcohol does it or viruses do it, chronic hep B or hep C. But fatty liver creates cirrhosis, which is that's a real downhill path towards liver failure. So, new study, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, how do you treat it? Well, there are a lot of, we treat it with milk thistle, we treat it with alpha-lipoic acid. Those are good treatments. Phosphatidylcholine protects the liver. There are a variety of liver-protective herbs, dandelion as well. But modulating the gut microbiome with probiotics and prebiotics was found in this edition of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition to slow the progression of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and to reverse it. So the They've actually had studies that show that you do a liver biopsy before, you do a liver biopsy after giving patients probiotics, and there's an improvement. There's an actual improvement. So in this study, liver biopsies are no picnic. So they used a new test called the FibroScan, which is kind of a cool test. It measures liver stiffness externally. It's a type of ultrasound test. So they put a little jelly on your abdomen, and they apply an ultrasound probe. And it's very cool. It's very cool that this is a way to prevent stiffening of your liver. Stiffening means that you're moving towards fibrosis and ultimately cirrhosis. So you want to have a nice, supple, very tender, flexible liver, not one that's infiltrated with fat and full of inflammation that can lead to fibrosis and cirrhosis. So what they say is that this study supports the safety of what they call synbiotic use. Synbiotic means combine a probiotic, that's lactobacillus bacteria of various kinds and bifidobacteria, along with prebiotics. Prebiotics help the bacteria to survive and grow in the intestinal tract. And very, very exciting because probiotics, we tend to think of, oh, it's good for diarrhea, it's good if you take antibiotics, but non-alcoholic fatty liver disease takes a real toll in this country. And you want your liver to be healthy? Take a probiotic. Probiotic that we like people to take, Dr. O'Hara's. It's a blend of prebiotics and probiotics, and it's an ideal way to reduce liver toxicity. Liver toxicity comes from the intestinal tract. You have bad bugs in your intestinal tract, bad bacteria. That can be toxic to the liver. That's what's happening in this study. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and you're listening to Intelligent Medicine.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. You know, Tylenol is one of the most commonly used pain medications. You know, virtually everyone takes a Tylenol here and there, and some people take them all the time because pain is such a ubiquitous problem. And they give it to kids when they have a fever. That has actually been shown to, if anything, prolong the duration of ordinary infectious colds, flus, because lowering the fever does kind of hampers the body's natural defense mechanisms. Hundreds of people die every year, and thousands are hospitalized. Tens of thousands because of Tylenol. Tylenol is very, very harmful to the liver. And we're sort of seeing the tip of the iceberg of the phenomenon when we look at the statistics, because a lot of people, they don't seek medical care when they get sick, when they take excessive Tylenol. Even taking some of the recommended doses, like 6 per day, may not be that good for a lot of people. And so this new report comes to us from Journal of the American Medical Association, Pediatrics. And it's very, very shocking because what they're saying is that if you're pregnant and you're pregnant, you've got aches and pains, you know, it's like you're heavier, you got a back pain, you're sore, you're uncomfortable, you take a Tylenol. Nope, you think nothing of it. But researchers studied 64,000 children and mothers for a long period of time. And they followed up in terms of what happened to the kids. More than half of all the mothers reported using acetaminophen or Tylenol while pregnant. The researchers found that children whose mothers used acetaminophen during pregnancy were at a 13% to 37% higher risk of later developing hyperkinetic disorder. That's ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, by the age of 7. The longer the Tylenol was taken, that is into the second and third trimesters, the stronger the associations. So it looks like really bad idea if you're pregnant to take Tylenol. Tylenol can ultimately affect kids' neurological development. It's a hormone disruptor. And it may influence fetal brain development, according to the researchers. So yet another harmless drug, widely used, that we really ought to be super cautious about. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. You're listening to Intelligent Medicine.